From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. That's Bobby Womack singing a song he wrote for Wilson Pickett. Womack also co-wrote It's All Over Now, which was covered by the Rolling Stones, and he wrote and sang the theme from Across 110th Street. On today's Fresh Air, Soul Music Week continues with Bobby Womack. Also, the seductive moaning, crooning, and recitations of Barry White. This oversized, deep-voiced singer is the guru of love to some fans and entertaining camp to others. His hits of the 70s combine soul, funk, and disco. Soul Week continues coming up on Fresh Air. First, the news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Frank Stacio. President Bush says the latest figures on economic growth show the recovery is very slow in coming, and he says he is deeply worried about America's working families. The president spoke to the American Legion in San Antonio, Texas, shortly after the Commerce Department reported the nation's gross domestic product rose by just 0.2% in spring. That's the economy's worst performance in 8 years. The president also said he's not backing off his request for more defense spending. A jury in Dallas has sentenced the leader of the so-called Texas Seven to death for the murder of a police officer last year. Suzanne Sprague of member station KERA reports.
Jurors deliberated for less than 2 hours after they heard the 31-year-old George Rivas say he deserved to die for organizing a prison break and fatally shooting a police officer. One juror who asked to remain anonymous said the decision was not terribly difficult.
It would be really hard to sit in that courtroom and not see all of the evidence that we saw and come to any other conclusion. I mean, if you're fair and open-minded, how could you not come to some version of that conclusion?
The remaining escapees will be tried later on the same charges. Prosecutors are seeking the death penalty in each of those cases as well. For NPR News, I'm Suzanne Sprague in Dallas.
A Northern California man accused of starting a wildfire that led to the deaths of two air tanker pilots has been arraigned on murder charges. Joe Barr of Capital Public Radio reports.
Air tanker pilots Larry Groff and Lars Stratt died when their planes collided Monday afternoon as they dumped fire retardant on the 270-acre blaze about 100 miles north of San Francisco. Authorities arrested 50-year-old Frank Brady the same day. Mendocino County District Attorney Norm Vroman says murder charges are warranted in this case.
Two people died putting out a fire that was started illegally, and the law allows us to prosecute people that commit an unsafe act or an act inherently dangerous to human life, resulting in the deaths of someone.
Brady has also been charged with operating a meth lab. Roman says the blaze was traced to a fire pit next to the lab, but he says it's not clear yet if the lab contributed to the fire. For NPR News, I'm Joe Barr in Sacramento.
The Reverend Jesse Jackson said today he's disappointed the United States refused to send a high-level delegation to the World Racism Conference in South Africa. Jackson made the statement before leaving for Durban today. He criticized President Bush for not allowing Secretary of State Colin Powell to attend the conference, which begins Friday in Durban. On Wall Street, stock prices were lower today. The Dow Jones Industrial Average fell 131 points to 10,090 on volume of 953 million shares. The Nasdaq was down 22 points at 1843, and the S&P 500 closed down 13 points. You're listening to NPR News. The American Medical Association's incoming chief says binge drinking on college campuses is a major health threat. Chairman-elect J. Edward Hill says binge drinking can no longer be treated as a rite of passage. The group's nationwide survey shows binge drinking is among parents' top concerns. 95% said excessive drinking is a serious threat to their children. Doctors say Senator John McCain is resting comfortably following prostate surgery at a Phoenix hospital. His office says there were no complications during the procedure, which took just over an hour. From member station KJZZ, Mark Moran reports.
Doctors used a type of medical scope to surgically remove part of McCain's enlarged prostate on this, the senator's 65th birthday. Physicians say the condition is common among men in their middle 60s and that McCain is expected to make a full and complete recovery. He'll be hospitalized for a day or two. McCain told reporters that he felt fine as he arrived at the Mayo Clinic Hospital in Phoenix this morning and that he was looking forward to having the procedure completed. McCain was treated here last year for recurring skin cancer. His doctor says the prostate condition is not related. McCain is expected to be back in Washington next week when Congress reconvenes. For NPR News, I'm Mark Moran in Phoenix.
Comedian Bob Hope has been hospitalized in a Los Angeles area hospital with what his publicist calls mild pneumonia. Ward Grant says Hope is responding well to treatment. Florida Governor Jeb Bush says the media hype about shark bites is hurting tourism in Smyrna Beach. Jeb Bush calls the coverage disproportional. There have been at least 20 shark attacks off Volusia County this year. That is half the number reported in the entire world. There have been 10 since August 18th. I'm Frank Stachow, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from USA Network, presenting live coverage of the 2001 U.S. Open, August 27 to September 9. Starts tonight at 7 p.m. Eastern and tomorrow morning at 11.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. It's Soul Music Week on Fresh Air. We're featuring interviews with soul singers, songwriters, session musicians, and producers. Bobby Womack started off singing gospel in the mid-50s with his brothers. They met Sam Cooke on the gospel circuit. Cooke signed them to his record label and recorded them singing rhythm and blues under the name The Valentinos. One of their records, It's All Over Now, co-written by Bobby Womack, was covered by the Rolling Stones. Womack went on to a solo recording career and also had some success as a songwriter. He wrote several songs for Wilson Pickett, including I'm a Midnight Mover and I'm in Love. He wrote and sang the title song of the 70s action film Across 110th Street. Here's Womack in 1968 singing What Is This?
What is this? Oh, yeah.
I spoke with Bobby Womack in 1999. We talked first about singer Sam Cooke, who changed Womack's life. Womack first heard Cooke sing in church.
It was in the early 1950s. He had just joined the Soul Stirrers. And it was strange because the guy that was this lead singer of the Soul Stirrers, R.H. Harris, was Sam idolized and worshiped the ground he walked on. And that's who he was trying to sing like. So R.H. Harris started to give him voice lessons and work with him. But R.H. Harris was like Rudolph Valentino. He had a woman in every city. And in every city, he also had kids. So it got to a point for child support, he couldn't perform anywhere because they would pick him up and take him off the stage. So it was really weird. So he says, I can't go out anymore. I don't know why he was able to stay in Chicago. Would it be because he didn't have no kids there? But anyway, he got Sam. Sam was 16, 17. And he said, this guy's got to replace me because I'm hurting the group. And Sam came in and took over. He took over so fast that it seemed like the people forgot about Harris. And Sam came to Cleveland to perform with the Soul Stirrers. And we were trying to get our break. In other words, if we could open up for the Soul Stirrers, at that time it was like opening up for the Rolling Stones. And all of the old guys in the group says, no, let them come back when they grow up. We're professionals. And you guys, y'all nice, that's cute, but this ain't no place for kids. And Sam said, what do you mean no place for kids? And he said, it's going to be a place today. And not only that, I want your mom to find the biggest purse she possibly can find, and we ain't singing until y'all take up an offering for them. And I never forgot that.
You once said that the first time you saw him perform in church, it's like he's fixing his hair in the middle of the concert. And,
oh, yeah.
And the women are going crazy.
He would say, wonderful, God is so wonderful. And he would just, I said, look at this guy. Women are going crazy. That was like a rock and roll show. So the older people didn't like it. They say, we don't think that they should play with God like this. I say, look, the Bible said make a joyful noise. You don't have to be under some spell to shout or cry and jump up and dance. I think it's great to see kids dancing off records, whatever. If they're dancing, they're respecting God. and they're showing him their love. So that's what it's all about. So the gospel is the truth. You just have to broaden the scope of it, and it can go as far as you let it go.
Well, Sam Cooke not only let you sing when he performed, he later signed you and your brothers to his recording label and produced you for singing gospel, but then singing rhythm and blues. Now, Sam Cooke, I think, was an inspiration to a lot of gospel singers because he crossed over from gospel to pop and made it really big. So,
and everybody was afraid to do that. Even Sam was afraid to do it.
How'd you feel about making that transition?
I was scared to death because everybody was constantly saying, Sam is not going to have any good luck because he sold himself out to the devil. And he was singing for God. Now he's worshiping the devil.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the way we were taught. And I was watching, saying, when is something going to happen to him? You know, and as soon as he had a car wreck, that was a warning. Then if something else happened, they would say, God's punishing him. I said, I don't know that kind of God. Those things just happen. And sorryly, he did leave here with a death you would never expect. But today, I mean, you could be walking down the street and somebody shoot you for snoring or talking to yourself, you know, so it's crazy. But it was then that was like Sam wasn't a violent kind of person, and he died of a bullet, of being shot by a woman.
Your father sang gospel. He sang with a group called Voices of Love. How did he feel when you and your brother started recording Rhythm and Blues?
He was very, very hurt. It broke his spirit. I remember he was so hurt that he told us, he said, all of you guys got to leave this house. You got to get out. You're not going to sing it in here. So he put us out. I quit school when I was about 16. And Harry was 14. He quit. Cecil was 13, and he quit. And my other two brothers had finished. And so we told Sam, he put us out. He said, where are you at? I said, we're standing on the corner. And he says, oh, God, man, I didn't want to cause that kind of problem. But he knew, because his father was a preacher. Mm. He said, I know what you're going through. He said, I just hate this responsibility. He said, do y'all know how to drive? I said, I got temporary license. And my oldest brother got license. He said, okay, I'm going to send you some money to buy a car. And y'all get on Route 66 and do not get off Route 66 until you get to California.
Is that what you did?
I was supposed to go buy a new Chevy station wagon. But all of the hustlers and the pimps and the fast street people had the big Cadillacs. So I said, I can't buy no Cadillac with this car and go to California, too. So I told my brothers, they're interested in getting a new car. Let's get this old Cadillac. It looks good. So they say, come on, Bob, let's do what he asked us to do. I said, no, let's get this Cadillac. And so I said, the Cadillac only costs $600. We got $2,700 left, you know. So they say, okay, so we bought this Cadillac, and the first thing I want to do is drive back on the school grounds and talk to my history teacher who always told me I would be nothing. He said, you're not going to be nothing but a janitor. You always talk about y'all going. So we used to go sing, and my father would drop us out the next morning. We come from Florida. He'd drop us out right in front of the school, and we're already an hour late, and we're running trying to get into school. And the kids were laughing, but he would always make a joke. One might go to the board. Who invented a cotton gin or some question like that? I'm looking for some girl. Tell me. Help me, please. Yeah. I'd write it 5,000 times. And he was always, so this guy, his name was Mr. Washington. I said, I got to drive back before I go anywhere. I drove on the school grounds and blew my horn, and everybody came running to the one. It's Womack. I said, yeah, that's where I got my start. Got me a caddy. You know. So he kept telling the kids, get away from the window. And the strangest thing happened, the car cut off and would not start. And, man, I'm praying to God, Jesus, please let this car start. I just want to get off the school grounds. He said, I'm going to call the police if you don't move the car. And it finally cranked up. And I got it home. We left that night going to, on our way to California. My mother was crying. She was worried. She packed us a big lunch. My father probably was sorry that he had pushed it to that point. But he was a very stubborn man. He wasn't the kind of guy to give in. So he says, he didn't say anything. We took off driving. A week later, they were still looking for us.
Where'd you
Sam
end up?
Say, well, we went to hospital because we were overtaken by gas fumes.
Oh, gosh.
It started to rain. We cut on the windshield wipers. They went straight off the car. And we kept filling the car up about, it seemed like every hour we had to put gas in the car. The tank had two big old holes in it. All the tires blew out, every last one. It was really crazy. So when we got to Hollywood, California, we were pushing the car down Hollywood Boulevard.
Well, so you finally made it to Hollywood in this really bum car that you spent your money on.
Oh, man,
and hooked up with Sam Cooke. Now, before we hear something that you recorded with your brothers produced by Sam Cooke, I want to just backtrack a second and play something that you recorded with your father, since we were talking about him and his reaction to your crossover.
I hope you played a song I think you're going to play.
Tarnished Rings from 1976.
Yeah,
this is a
song.
Great recording.
Great song. And I heard his voice the other day. It scared me to death because I drive his car right now.
No,
that's
really?
My favorite automobile. It's 1974 Buick, just like it was when he drove it off the floor. And that was the car I purchased for him, that he said, if you ever do anything and you ever make it out there, he said, you could buy me a deuce and a quarter. So I said, well, deuce and a quarter? I didn't know what a deuce and a quarter was. I said, yeah, I'll get that for you, Pop. But when I did make my first piece of money, I said, I'm going to get my father that deuce and a quarter. And I asked somebody, what's a deuce and a quarter? They said, he must be from back east. So that's a Buick. I said, is that what he wanted, a Buick, not a Cadillac? No, he wants a Buick. So he had that Buick, and he would never let me trade it in. So when he passed away, I restored the car till its original, just the way it was originally. And I drive it all the time. It feels like when I start it up, he starts up.
Right. When did he
pass? The other day, that song, I forgot I had a CD put in it, and that song just came on. Tarnished Ring scared me to death. I thought my father was in the car. I said, oh, God.
Well, let's hear Tarnished Rings, recorded in 1976. This is my guest, Bobby Womack, with his father, Friendly Womack Sr.
You know, people always ask me, Mr. Bobby, where did you learn how to sing like that? Well, I think I'll let y'all in on a little something extra. I want you to hear my father sing this particular song. He's
well, I sang a ring that never graced a finger. Time store trinkets made of glass and tin. And how we cling faded dreams that linger. Fancying the past can live again. Tarnished ring and imitation jewelry. Foolish things I cannot leave behind.
All right, Dad, my turn. For this ring and imitation jewelry always bring you back into my mind. When I was young, I thought all...
It's Bobby Womack and his father, Friendly Womack Sr., recorded in 1976. Let's pick up where Sam Cooke had signed you and your brothers, and after recording a few gospel sides, you started to do rhythm and blues. You were, you know, performing, I think, on stage with people like Sam Cooke. I think the Valentinos opened for James Brown, didn't you?
Yeah, we opened for James Brown. We opened for Solomon Burke. We opened for the Falcons, who had Wilson Pickett as their lead singer at that time. Eddie Floyd.
This must have been something different for you than singing in the church.
Well, it was different because the women could come in mini dresses and whatever, and... you didn't have a pretty women backstage in church, you know. They caught the service and they went home.
Did you go wild?
I could take them home.
Right.
Then I go wow. They called me Wild Bill Hickok. Yeah, but I tell you, and something like that, when you first get it, I mean, you basically sing 70% of the audience is women.
Mm-hmm.
But after being in it for 10 years, you adjust and you find out this is gonna be happening every night. You know, you better get used to it.
My guest is Bobby Womack. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air.
Leave you alone.
It's Soul Music Week on Fresh Air. Let's get back to our 1999 interview with Bobby Womack.
I'd like to play what's probably the best-known song from the early part of your career. This is a song you co-wrote. It's called It's All Over Now, which was covered by the Rolling Stones after you recorded it with
your brothers. They just did a commercial on that again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, tell me a little bit about writing the song. Do you remember writing it?
I remember I had an uncle. His name was Uncle West. That was my father's youngest brother. And he was in love with this woman named Betty Jo. But Betty Jo was going to church with him and Dad all the time. And she was a pretty lady. And one day she just said, enough is enough. And she started going to nightclubs and hanging out. And she used to wear these long dresses. And then she took a dress up to her past her knees. Uncle West could not control it. So every weekend, he didn't know where she was. Nobody knew where she was. They knew she was out having a good time. And she come in, but he'd be talking about, I'm leaving Betty. This is it. No, it's all over now. It's all, I swear it's all over now. Soon as Betty Jo came in the house, was like, well, stick to your guns, don't. She come in there and she said, how you doing, honey? You gotta get, I got your bags packed. She said, come here a minute. She take him in another room. We never understood what happened. But he go in that room, he never came out. I didn't know if they were dead, but the next morning he'd be unpacking her bags. We said, Uncle West, you fell for it. So I said, next week when she go out this week, don't go in the room when she comes back tight. Hold on to the couch, we'll help you. He kept saying, you don't understand. I said, no, I understand. Just don't go in that room. So the same thing applied again the next week. And she said, come here, West. And so he'd be telling her, no, it's all over now. So that's how the song came about. But I used to love her, but it's all over now. And I didn't know about, because I wasn't too young to fall in love. I was 15 when I wrote the song, but just thinking about it, that's where the song came from.
Well, let's hear It's All Over Now, recorded by the Valentinos, which is the Womack brothers.
Womack brothers.
My guest, Bobby
call
Womack.
Call us in church. Womack boys.
My guest, Bobby Womack, is singing lead on this 1964 recording. That's Bobby Womack and his brothers, who were known then as the Valentinos, recorded in 1964. So what was your reaction when you found out that the Rolling Stones wanted to record your song?
I was very upset.
Why were you upset?
It's because, as far as I can remember, that every time a black artist came out with a song, you know, segregation was everywhere. It was in music and everything. So they would say, we can't let that record be played on pop stations, which were white stations. So we would get a Pat Boone, somebody to take the same song and sing it, which the white audience never knew it was sung by a black artist. The same with Elvis Presley songs. You know, it was written by a lot of black artists and sung by most black artists. There was hits on the black side of town. On the white side of town, it was a whole different thing. So when Sam came to me and said, Bobby, it's a group called the Rolling Stones. And I said, yeah, that's nice. Hope they keep rolling. He said, no, what I'm trying to tell you, he said, they like your song, and they want to sing your song. They want to record it. I said, man, let them get their own song. I don't want them singing my song. And he said, you don't understand. They're going to be huge. He said, Bobby, the Rolling Stones coming, whether you like it or not. And he said, and plus, I own the publishing. He said, I'm trying to tell you that this is going to be a career move for you. I said, yeah, but, Dad, this is our first break.
Did you like their version of it?
Well, I didn't like their version because I didn't think Mick Jagger, until the day I said Mick Jagger can't out-sing me. Yeah. But when I saw that first royalty check, I liked their version.
Right.
Much. I said, good God almighty. I said, man, I could go back and buy Cleveland.
let me ask
so
you about
I've been chasing them for the past 30 years, saying, just do one more song. If y'all do one more song, man, I'll retire to be Sam Bobby. You started us the writing. Because Andrew Odom says, Bobby, when you quit that song, I told him, I said, if you want to be the Beatles, you can't keep taking songs from other people. You got to start writing your own songs. They said, we can't write. He said, yes, you can write. And he was the sixth stone, really.
Sam Cooke was killed, shot and killed in 1964, and I know that changed your life in every way. I mean, he was your close friend, your close musical associate. And then you became became part of his family in a way.
I married Sam's wife.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people, I mean, I think I must have invented the tabloids because, I mean, they ate me alive. They used to call me the boy that married Sam Cooke's wife. And I was saying, I got to cut some hit records now because I want my name back, Bobby Womack. And I figured I don't know if I could take that as through song. You know, it was trying to compare me with Sam, and it wasn't Sam. And I still say today, I'm 55, I was 19 when I married her, that I married her because I saw a move going down where it was separation between the two. Sam played around a lot. People talked and said, don't let her know the business. Don't let her know anything about it. She'll be the first one to divorce you and you'll be broke. Let us keep the money up here. And this kind of thing. And I said, well, and he used to always say, I said, Sam, why don't you get a will? And he said, will? He says, Bob, if I made up a will, my wife would kill me. He said, Oscar, I have to play around. I love women. And that's just my nature. That's just part of me. So he said, but if I should die, he said, bury me deep and put two women on each side of me. And he would always laugh. And I said, I don't find that funny, man. I think, but here's the guy. I mean, I'm 19 and Sam was about 30, you know. And so he thought it's funny. He said, I'll tell you what, you be my will. Something happened to me, you take care of my family. And he would joke like that. But I took him very serious. So soon as that happened, I started being the detective, walking around saying, hey, I know where the money's at. I know what bank it's in. I know this is this. And he also owned this. He owned that. What is the publishing? And I told him the publishing.
So you're saying you didn't feel like you were betraying him in any way?
No, I wasn't betraying him. I was doing just what he would have done if he was here.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
I said, I will make sure that she's in a position. I told her, I said, I don't love you. She said, she's the one said, it was like the graduate. She said, marry me.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know her like that, but I knew how he felt about his family, regardless of what a man do. You know, I mean, he would have died 1,000 times before he felt that came out, but he couldn't protect himself because he got killed. And I said, it's all over the headlines, and they put it in the worst way.
Bobby Womack, recorded in 1999. We'll hear more of the interview in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.
Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by Barnes & Noble Booksellers and the Discover Great New Writers Program, which features the literary voices of tomorrow today. Information available at Barnes & Noble stores and on the web at www.bn.com. By the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced. And from Audi, presenting Audi-assured certified pre-owned cars, including the A4, A6, and A8 with quattro all-wheel drive. AudiUSA.com/pre-owned. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
I love you, baby.
Coming up, Fresh Air Soul Music Week continues with Barry White. His crooning, moaning, and reciting made him the guru of love to many fans. And we continue our conversation with singer Bobby Womack.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with more of our 1999 interview with singer Bobby Womack. He started off singing gospel with his brothers and crossed over to soul music after he was discovered by Sam Cooke. He co-wrote the song It's All Over Now, which was covered by the Rolling Stones. He wrote I'm a Midnight Mover for Wilson Pickett, and he wrote and performed the theme from the 70s action film Across 110th Street. Now, you were also really well-known as a session guitarist in the 60s and 70s, and I want to get to an example of your session work and a very kind of famous wah-wah guitar line that you played for Sly and the Family Stone's recording Family Affair. Where did you learn to play wah-wah guitar?
Well, I just, I play upside down. I'm a left-handed guitar player. My father was a guitar player, and I learned how to play. I taught myself.
Well, let's hear you on guitar, wah-wah guitar, on this recording of Sly and the Family Stone's Family Affair.
Somebody that just loves to learn, and another child grows up to be somebody you just love to burn. Mom loves the both of them, you see it's in the blood. Both kids are good to mom, blood's thicker than the mud. It's a family affair.
That was Bobby Womack on guitar. Now tell me, you know, wah-wah guitar ended up sounding so dated after a while. Like, was there a time when you said, okay, it's over for this style of playing, I'm not going to do it anymore?
The guy that had the name for wah-wah guitar was the guy's name was Wah-Wah, and he played wah-wah on everything. I just played wah-wah on that song because I was trying to create something, so I said, hey, Sly's never used a wah-wah. I'll put the wah-wah on it. And we was in the studio, and we were just, like, hanging out, and it came out that way. But I didn't play wah-wah on everything. I didn't even like it. I liked it on that song because it just sort of fit with grace notes that he was playing on keyboards.
Well, it certainly adds to how memorable the song is.
But during those days, wah-wah played on all the Temptation stuff. His name was Wah-Wah Watson, and he was the Wah-Wah King. And I said, one day, they're gonna not need your pedals. They're going to be sick of that. Wah-Wah, 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 Wah-Wah. And he used to laugh, and sure, the day came.
My guest is Bobby Womack. Now, I want to move on to another of your many great records. And this is Across 110th Street, which you wrote as the theme for the movie of the same name, which starred Anthony Quinn and Yaphet Kotto. And this was one of, like, the great action films of the early 70s. How much of the movie had you seen before you had to write the theme song for it?
I saw the movie all the way through one time.
Did you like it?
I loved the movie, but I felt that the company really didn't want to let me do the... And I was going to go on tour the very next day. They said you got to have the score done in 2 weeks. What they didn't know is that whole story was about something I lived all my life, the ghetto.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, I could write this song and just keep elaborating on it and do other songs without ever seeing the movie again. Because everybody told me, said they should have given you TV, edited version down so you could look at it and you could set the song tones to. You know, I didn't get a chance to do that. And plus, when you're touring and hitting one-nighters every night, I was surprised that I came off with what I did. And I had to record it, all of this in 2 weeks. I went to muscle shows and cut everything, and got the tape back, and the guy said, that's incredible. Boy, if we would have given him the time that he needed, no telling what would happen. I said, probably the same thing.
No, I'm not sure it would have gotten better than this.
No, I don't think it would have gotten better, because I think I'm better when I'm under pressure.
Mm-hmm. Let's hear your recording of Across 110th Street.
Ooh,
I was the third brother of five, doing whatever I had to do to survive. I'm not saying what I did was all right. Trying to break out of the ghetto was a day-to-day fight. Being down so long, getting up didn't cross my mind. But I knew there was a better way of life, and I was just trying to find. You don't know what you do till you put under pressure. Cross 110th Street is a hell of a tester. Across 110th Street, pimps trying to catch a woman that's weak. Across 110th Street, pushers won't let the junkie go free. Across 110th Street, woman trying to catch a trick on the street.
That's Bobby Womack's theme from Across 110th Street. You must have been pleased when Quentin Tarantino used this in Jackie Brown to open the film.
Yeah, because, you know, I used to date Pam Grier.
Oh, wow.
That was Rosie Grier's ex-Rams. That's his niece. And so he introduced me to her after me and Barbara divorced. And he says, hey, man, she's a beautiful girl. And she was saying, I'm going to be a star. And she was real wild, but she was real positive. I mean, she would get anywhere, and anything she wanted to do, Pam Grier would find a way. So I've had her singing on Across 110th Street.
Well, Bobby Womack, now that we've heard several of the many songs that you've written over the years, I thought we could listen to your cover of a very famous song, and I think I'll surprise our listeners with what it is.
The loveliness of Paris seems somehow sadly gay. The glory that was Rome is now yesterday. I've been terribly alone and forgotten in Manhattan, but I'm going home to my city by the bay. I left my heart in San Francisco, high on a hill. It calls to me to be wed, little cable cars. Climb way halfway to the stars.
What inspired you to record I Left My Heart in San Francisco?
Well, I did Fly Me to the Moon, but I did it up-tempo. And when I met Tony Bennett, I was teasing him about it. I said, who wants to fly slow? I said, fly me to the moon and let me play among the stars. I said, but I did fly, da 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 da. So it was the same thing. It was taking songs way before disco ever came in and giving them what you call a facelift. I took San Francisco. I left my heart in San Francisco and took it up tempo.
And what did Tony Bennett think of your recording? Did he hear it?
He loved it. I ran into him in the theater, and I had been talking all this talking papers, but I didn't know him. So I was trying to ease out the theater for the, and they said, that good guy that said your song. And he said, hey, Bobby, come here a minute. And I froze, came back. Hey, oh, man, I didn't see you. He said, I loved the way you did the song. I think it's fantastic. And I felt really good. I said, I'm glad you really like it, Mr. Bennett. And that was it.
Well, I'm really glad that you made this album of gospel songs. And I really want to thank you for joining us. It's really been fun. I really
And Terry,
it.
I must say, you know, next time I'm in Philly, I want you to be my special guest. I really do. I want you to come up and just watch me perform and see. And when I come off the stage, I want you to tell me, Bobby, you're slowing down. Maybe you need to or tell me, Bobby, you're a monster. Bobby, you still got it. Bobby, you're stronger than you've ever been. As I know you'll tell me the truth.
That's right.
I already know. They said, Terry, man, if you're thinking you look good, she say, Womack, you don't look too hot, man. I'm saying, but I mean, I love you, but you don't look good. Take care of yourself, baby.
Oh, you too.
Bobby Womack recorded in 1999. He has a new CD called Soul Sensation Live, which is scheduled to be released in late September. Coming up, Soul Music Week continues with Barry White. This is Fresh Air. Barry White has been described as the maestro of love, the guru of love, the king of makeout music, and the high priest of boudoir soul. He recites, moans, and croons about love in a deep, mellow voice. For some listeners, this is very seductive. For others, it's camp. White had his biggest hits in the 70s, combining the sounds of soul, funk, and disco. More recently, rappers have sampled his music, and he's made guest appearances on Ally McBeal, where his songs have been the soundtrack of one character's fantasies. I spoke with Barry White in 1999. Let's start with one of his big hits. This is Can't Get Enough of Your Love, Babe.
I've heard people say that too much of anything is not good for you, baby. But I don't know about that. Many times that we've loved and we've shared love and made love, it doesn't seem to me like it's enough. It's just not enough, baby. It's just not enough.
Oh, baby.
Oh, baby.
My darling, I can't get enough of your love, baby. Everything is you. What kind of love is this that you're giving me? Is it in your kiss or just because you're sweet? Girl, all I know is every time you're here, I feel a change, something moving. I scream your name. Look what you got to do with, darling. I can't get enough of your love, baby.
Barry White, welcome to Fresh Air. Let's start with your style of talking and singing. How did you develop that way of talking on your records? Were you more confident about talking than singing?
No, I'm very relaxed either way, singing or talking. I just felt as a creative person that when I did records, I would like to not only sing them, but explain them to a great degree also, so people would know exactly what I'm talking about.
What kind of comments did people used to give you about your speaking voice before you started recording?
Oh, I used to get a lot of different women and men, both in elevators. It was always when I asked for, when I would request a floor that I wanted to get off of, everybody on the elevator would turn around. You know, it was always like a big surprise or something, you know, when I'd call long distance and the operator would get on the phone before she would get me the number I was calling. She had to compliment me on the way my voice sounded. There's a lot of different things like that.
When did your voice get that deep, and what was your reaction when your voice started getting deeper?
Well, my voice changed when I was 14 years old, and I became a neighborhood freak for about a month and a half, and because most boys' voices change at 13, 12, or 14 years old. But my voice went from a tenor's voice to a baritone bass. And then a couple of years later, it dropped down to a bass baritone. So my voice just went through the changes it went through. And it's been the way it is today for a long time.
Well, let's hear one of your hits from 1975, and this is Love Serenade. Would you like to introduce it or say anything about writing or recording this?
I enjoyed it. Love Serenade deals with a guy and his girl, and he wants to get very intimate with her, you know, and he wants her to come to him in a certain way, looking a certain way, being a certain way. And Love Serenade takes care of that way.
This is Barry White.
Take it off. Baby, take it all off. I want you the way you came into the world. I don't wanna feel no clothes. I don't wanna see no panties. And take off that brassiere, my dear. Everybody's gone. We take the receiver off the phone. Because baby, you and me, this night, we're gonna get it on. To Love Serenade. You know I get in these moods.
That's Barry White, Love Serenade, recorded in 1975. Now, you say in your new autobiography that women have always told their boyfriends that they can tell just from listening to you that Barry knows how to make love to a woman. I think what listeners really want to know is, when you're actually with a woman, do you talk that way in real life? Would you say the kind of things that you say in Love Serenade?
Well, that's my language. That's my dialogue. That's the way I am. That's nothing made up for records. All I'm doing on records is sharing to you what I think, what I say, what I feel as an artist on a record. I say those things and many other things to my woman, you know. That's nothing new to me or new to whoever I'm with. You know, I am a very communicative person. Whether I'm talking about making love, whether I'm talking about everyday life, her life, our life together, I communicate. I believe in that. I strongly believe in it.
Now, do you think that there's been a lot of guys over the years who've tried to use your words to say things like, I don't want to see no panties, and take off that brassiere, my dear, and it comes off all wrong, and it just kind of blows up in their face?
Yeah, well, I'm sure there's been some guys that's tried to imitate, emulate my words. I mean, the guys was doing that when I was in junior high school to other artists. And they're what they were singing, and they be trying to sing to the girls and all that, you know. Yeah, they do it. It's all in fun, you know. I don't see nothing wrong with it.
Barry White, did you ever see the film Taxi Driver?
Yeah, what about it?
Harvey Keitel plays a pimp and taxi driver, and one of his prostitutes is a girl about 12 or 13, played by Jodie Foster. And there's mm-hmm. a scene in which she's particularly lonely and she's thinking about trying to get away. And then the Harvey Keitel character, Sport, puts on some slow music, takes her in his arms, and talks to her in this really sexy, reassuring way. And this rap was something that Keitel himself came up with. I interviewed him a few years ago. I want to play that scene for you, but first I want you to hear what Harvey Keitel said when I asked him what inspired this rap.
Okay.
I took the idea from a Barry White song.
Oh, that's really interesting, because I always think of that scene when I hear a certain kind of Barry White song.
Yes, right. Well, that's where I got the idea from.
Which particular song was it?
There was no particular song, just his style.
I don't like what I'm doing, Sport.
Baby, I never want you to like what you're doing. If you ever liked what you were doing, you wouldn't be my woman.
You never spend any time with me anymore.
Well, I got to attend to business, baby. You miss your man, don't you? I don't like to be away from you either. You know how I feel about you. I depend on you. I'd be lost without you. Don't you ever forget that. How much I need you.
Barry White, what's your reaction to knowing that you inspired Harvey Keitel to do this scene?
That's a nice compliment, but, that was a scene of a pimp and his lady. I don't speak as a pimp. I'm not a pimp. I don't relate to my woman as a whole or as a prostitute or any of those forms of things. I deal with my woman as my woman. I respect all women. I don't care who it is. My mother taught me that as a little boy, and I've grown up all my life with that philosophy.
My guest is Barry White. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. It's Soul Music Week on Fresh Air. Let's get back to our interview with Barry White.
Let's talk a little bit about your childhood, which you talk about mm-hmm. in your new book. You grew up in South Central Los Angeles.
Right.
What was the neighborhood like when you were growing up? And this was, what, in the 40s and 50s?
Yeah, in the 50s and 60s, yeah. It was rough. Things were very hard. But you make the best out of whatever you got, and you go on, and that's what we did.
Now, you write about how you were arrested at the age of 15 in 1959. What for?
For burglary, for stealing tires.
Did you want to sell them?
Oh, yeah. We had fences all over Los Angeles, and anything we stole, we could get rid of within minutes. So we stole $30,000 worth of dual 90 tires. And my neighbor snitched on me. He saw us putting the tires in my garage, and he called the police. And I went to jail. I ended up going to jail. And if I saw that guy today, I would thank him profusely, believe me.
The judge. You thank the judge in your acknowledgments, in fact.
Oh, yeah. Not only the judge, the guy that snitched on me, I would thank him, too, you know.
Why?
It was a great, great change came over me in jail. So I'd never been locked up. I'd done a lot of crime and a lot of burglaries and a lot of GTAs and fighting and things, but I'd never went to jail for it. But this time, I heard the gates close behind me, those loud-ass gates. And I didn't like it. I didn't like nothing about it. People telling me when to get up, when to go to sleep, what to eat, when to eat. I had robbed myself of my privacy. And a lot of great things came to Barry White in jail. And only in jail could they have come to me.
Like what?
The way they did with such impact. Because you have to sometimes, some people you have to really take away valuable things from them before they really understand how valuable what they lost really is. And that's what happened to me.
Barry White recorded in 1999 after the publication of his autobiography. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Today's edition of Soul Music Week was produced by Patty Leswing. Our engineer is Bob Purdick. Dorothy Farabee is our administrative assistant. Roberta Shirok directs the show. I'm Terry Gross.
Support for Fresh Air comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced. From Book Magazine, for the passionate reader, featuring books, authors, and articles that read between the lines, in bookstores and online at bookmagazine.com. From Bantam Books, a division of Random House, publisher of Lost Soldiers, a novel set in present-day Vietnam by James Webb, author of Fields of Fire. And from Wilmington Trust, a wealth management company providing investment and trust services to individuals, families, and corporations nationwide for nearly 100 years. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
On the next Fresh Air, Soul Music Week continues with Teddy Pendergrass and Al Green. Join us for the next Fresh Air.